Hello and welcome to Euractiv's AgriFood podcast. I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
And I'm Natasha Fitt.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euractiv's AgriFood team.
Well, we've had a little bit of a hiatus, so welcome back to all of our listeners. And this is the first podcast after the super trilogue that happened a few weeks back. Should we have a quick recap? What was the super trilogue, Gerardo? What happened? Why were we so excited? So,
first of all, nothing happened. No, I'm joking. yeah, there was a lot of expectations, and actually things are moving towards. I mean,
there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, yeah. There was also this week, this hearing at the European Parliament Agriculture Committees, where the MEPs basically consider useful this meeting. So yeah, the super trilogue is basically a negotiating meeting between the European Parliament negotiators, all the three Parliament negotiators, because as you probably remember, the Common Agricultural Policy is made up of three dossiers, and they met the Portuguese presidency, who's basically negotiating on behalf of the EU agriculture ministers.
Everyone was at the party.
Yeah, even for instance, our special guest.
Indeed, and which is why we invited him onto the podcast this week. And so who are we talking about? Today we have with us Norbert Linz, who is the chair of the European Parliament's Agricultural Committee. We spoke a little bit more about what went on in the Super Trilogue.
So thanks for being with us, Mr. Linz. Let's start with this Super Trilogue, of course. It took place at the end of March, before the Easter break. It was a meeting strongly requested by the Portuguese presidency with all the Parliament negotiators, and you were also there as the chair of the Agriculture Committee. However, after 10 hours of negotiations, not that much was agreed upon. There are still outstanding issues that needs to be sorted out in the next weeks, but there were also some good signals. I would like to ask you, what's your take on the Super Trilogue, and was it really useful?
It was useful because my expectation were not that high when you compare it with the ones from the presidency. For me, it was clear that some major elements will be maybe discussed, but not decided at this super trilogue, and this was the case at the end. But we made a step forward on a few elements, for example, on the strategic plans. We had a provisional agreement on the so-called mini package. We had an agreement on the a new delivery model within the horizontal regulation in the combined or connected elements with the strategic plans. And we had good progress when it comes to the common market organization, because we had a provisional agreement within the wine sector and producer organization. So we are now closer to an agreement, but there is much more needed to push in the direction of a final agreement.
And after the super trilogue, you actually commented saying that the council needs to show more flexibility. So I was wondering, you know, what does this mean exactly? Could you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah, more flexibility on some main elements. That means on the eco schemes, that means on the capping, degressivity, and redistributive payments. So that means the element which would lead us to a fairer cap for the European Union, and more flexibility when it comes to the green architecture, especially when it comes to the so-called conditionality, the green ones and the social conditionality, to name a few of them.
And to an outside eye like mine, I mean, I'm not in the negotiating room with you, and I can feel there's a strong belief in the Portuguese presidency that they're going to strike if not a deal, at least an agreement in principle before the end of the presidency in July. Of course, it could be a negotiating strategy, but sometimes it really looks that they, you know, take the deal with the parliaments for granted. And I want to ask you very frankly, is the parliament ready to actually stop the procedure and wait for the next Slovenian presidency if negotiators won't be satisfied with the parliament's red lines?
For sure. No? We are not ready for a compromise at any price. The case in this was always the majority view of the parliament. However, I'm really optimistic because I see that there is a lot of engagement by the presidency, and we are really working hard towards a final agreement.
And you mentioned there the issue of social conditionality, but speaking of some of the other remaining thorny issues, there's still not an agreement when it comes to the definition of what it means to be a farmer, although we're kind of seeing some movement on the definition of young farmers. So I'm wondering, what is the position of the parliament here, and what's your kind of your forecast for the final outcome on this definition?
We are close to an agreement. I didn't want to go into detail, but there was only minor things why we were not able to finalize it 3 weeks ago. So there I'm really optimistic.
And another tricky topic is this new delivery model, which still divides the two sides. In the Super Trilogue, you agreed on certain indicators, for instance, but that's not enough for the parliament. Do you see the end of the tunnel on this issue after what you actually consider step in the right directions taking during the Super Trilogue?
We really made a lot of progress there on what I mentioned before on the mini package. These are the connected elements to the horizontal regulation. In horizontal regulation, we made a major step because we agreed on the new delivery model, which was not the case before the trilogue. So this was really a very good progress. We didn't finalize the horizontal regulation, but this was really a large step forward.
And when it comes to eco-schemes, the European Parliament came under a lot of fire from both, environmental NGOs, but also the general public opinion, who were saying that the European Parliament lacked ambition in this area. And so we're wondering, were you surprised about these kind of reactions? Some of them were quite strong to this position.
Yeah, I was really surprised at that. When you look into the three institutions which are in the trilogues, that's clear that the parliament is the most ambitious. When you compare it with the original commission proposal, it is clear that the council is more ambitious than the commission, and the parliament is the most ambitious institution when it comes to the green architecture. So I'm still surprised about attacks from outside of the parliament.
And there's also this issue of decoupling the crisis reserve from the cap budget. We know the council is very skeptical about this, but what are the latest on this aspect? Have you already reached an agreement?
No, we didn't talk about this, but I expect that this will be a part of the last trilogue. I'm not sure, but there is no agreement.
So on a slightly different note, you just came out from a joint meeting between the Agri and Peti committees on ending the cage age. So what I'm kind of wondering is how you see the future going in terms of this issue. Do you think the commission will go ahead with this kind of initiative?
Three commissioners attended this meeting, so I have the impression that there is a lot of sensitivity within the commission on this, but now it's up to the commission to deliver along the Green Deal and the farm to fork strategy when it comes to animal welfare question as a whole, and when it comes to this question of end the cage age. But in detail, things are more complicated, often more complicated than expected.
And lastly, in a recent debate on the revision of the EU's agriculture promotion policy, you complain about this approach of the European Commission when it comes, for instance, to the promotion of the organic farming that the Commission is basically putting in every policy, which also derives from the farm-to-fork strategy. Do you have some, let's say, beef with the Commission, or do you think that the Parliament has been snubbed on certain files or not being properly consulted?
What I have preferred, so you may know that I'm I was never against organic farming. Yeah? So I was the rapporteur of my group for 3 years for the revision of the organic regulation. So that means for the control, for the production rules, and so on, for the organic sector in the European Union, and coming from a region where we have 14% of land which is farmed in the organic way. I think I have some sensitivity when it comes to the organic sector. But that's not the question. It's a question how we proceed with each other, or how we proceed among the three institutions in the European Union. And I think the first step is a strategy from the Commission, for sure, like the farm to fork strategy. Then this has to be discussed in the Parliament and in the Council, and then we have to deliver what was the outcome of the discussion in Parliament and in Council. And I have sometimes the feeling that they have a straightforward approach as Commission, and they don't want to involve the Parliament all the time like I would expect it.
In other news, I mean, we always say this every week, that is, been a busy week, but actually this week the number of events and other
developments,
quite a lot. It was so big, so huge, that we I personally prepared a top 10 of things happened this week.
The top 10 rundown of interesting things. Wow, 10 whole things.
Natasha is not aware of what's happening, so you're going to improvise, because, I mean, it comes as a surprise, actually. But
you're going to get my true reaction to whatever you're about to
say.
So that's what we're looking for here.
Let's start with the 10th position. It's actually a tweet by Agriculture Commissioner Janusz Wojciechowski, who basically expressed his participation to this to the final ministerial resolution, the ministerial declaration, on the Bratislava Conference. The Bratislava Conference was, again, a document on adapting forests to climate change. And the declaration was on the future that we want, the forests we need. That's the title. Mm. The point is that he published this tweet, Janusz Wojciechowski, while he was signing, actually, a paper, document, a paper version of this ministerial declaration, which sounds a bit like, preaching good and doing evil. So not like this, Janusz. Yeah. The 9th position is actually on the EFSA public consultation. So EFSA is basically the food safety agency. They're going to start this public consultation in which they basically start the review of the welfare and animals, welfare of animals during transport in the EU.
Which is set to be quite a big and potentially controversial topic.
Also the work of the special committee on it. at European Parliament. So it's very high on the agenda, animal welfare. The eighth place is for the vote on the farm to fork strategy in the internal market committee. Like every week we talk about the agriculture committee in the European Parliament. Quite often we talk about the ENVI committee, but there are also other committees like this one on single market, the IMCO committee. And they basically express their opinion on the farm to fork strategy, the new EU's flagship food policy.
Which makes sense. It has so many, implications in that area.
Particularly when it comes to labeling, because, mm-hmm. I mean, it's labeling. It's, of course, about food safety, but it's also about internal market. And you remember the issue with the nationalist approach to food labeling. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, when you basically put the origin in order to promote national products. And sometimes this approach has been
criticized.
Criticized because of the the internal market, because of internal market arguments. No, so it's it could threaten actually the free circulation of goods in the internal market.
And it's something we saw quite a lot during the pandemic. Kind of turned to a kind of more protectionist stance, like more local produce, which is obviously championed by the farm to fork strategy. But at the same time, weighing it up with all the different issues.
That's why the Internal Market Committee has had a voice in the process. Of course, the committee who actually is supposed to draft the final report, and actually it's both the Agriculture Committee and the Environment Committee. We spoke some weeks ago in our podcast with one of the rapporteurs on the Farm to Fork Strategy, Herbert Dorfman. One of the interesting aspects that they highlight in their advisory opinion is the possibility to explore the necessity to apply specific conditions to certain food categories when it comes to the food labeling, the EU-wide food labeling system that the EU is supposed to put forward in the next years. So it's basically like an exemption for instance, olive oil, which is basically one of the most criticized aspect of one of the food labeling that's being discussed by the Commission, the Nutri-Score.
Mm.
And the seventh place is for an event organized by the STOA panel, which is basically the Science and Technology Options Assessment panel in the European Parliament, organized on gene editing.
Okay, we're going to hear a lot about this month, I imagine.
Indeed. If you want to know more, first of all, go to our website and check our special report, mini special report on
where we're at with gene editing and what's happening, the latest developments.
And why it's so important to talk about this developments on gene editing. Can you tell us a bit more about this, Natasha?
Well, since this ruling back in, I think it was 2018, European Court of Justice ruling that found that gene edited crops fall in principle under the EU's GMO directive. Since then, the kind of outcome of this ruling has been really heavily disputed. Industry players are really pushing for this decision to be revised. And in amongst all of this debate over the future of gene editing crops, the Commission basically said the next step is that they're going to be publishing the study on new genomic techniques, which in their words aims to kind of clarify the situation in light of this ruling, what this really means. And in practice, we'll see, and we'll see very soon, actually, because the study is supposed to be published at the end of April. So it's coming up we're in mid-April already, so two weeks time potentially at some point. And this is big. This is why we're going to be talking a lot more about gene editing in the coming days, and we have been talking a lot about it in the last couple of weeks. So it'll be very interesting to see what the outcome of the study is.
You actually reminded me when I had the interview with your active, actually my interview.
Your interview?
Yeah.
Oh, your interview when they interviewed you for the role.
Yeah, indeed. It was the former agriculture editor, Sarantis Michalopoulos, and we had this interview. And I remember it was the day when there was the ECJ ruling, And he was basically telling me, you know, talking about this in his very strong Greek accent. It's a mess. It's a mess. No. I can say that my experience at Euractiv started with this rune. So it's basically,
and we're still talking about it now. Yeah. Wow, I can't believe you witnessed this. I've spoken so much about it. You witnessed this historic moment. Oh my goodness.
And we move to the sixth position, which is basically the hearing with Janusz Wojciechowski, the Agriculture Commissioner, in the European Parliament on the Organic Action Plan. Even on these aspects, we wrote a lot. So we suggest you to go on our website to check the latest coverage. The fifth place is actually for the vote in the ENVI committee, the Environment Committee, on soil, on how to protect soil.
Can't believe this is only fifth place, Gerardo. You didn't put this up higher.
I know.
How dare you?
Because it's an own initiative. You know, in the European Parliament, the own initiative is for recommendation. So,
but it's about soil, and soil is life.
It's a good. It was voted with 73 votes in favor, 7 against, and then basically calling the Commission to design an EU-wide common legal framework for the protection and sustainable use of soil. So quite interesting aspect. Let's move to the fourth position, which are basically latest on the common agricultural policy reform. There was a trilogue, there was actually two trilogues this week, one actually happening as we speak. It's Friday. And you know, the latest is basically, it seems that this was anticipated by Wojciechowski in a hearing, that they agreed, for instance, on animal welfare and to include animal welfare in the Commission's eco-scheme. But also, as you heard from Norbert Linz, they are quite there when it comes to the definition of farmers. So, and now we go to the podium. So at the third place, we have very interesting ruling from the European Court of Justice on electric fishing.
Your favorite subject. Well, not electric fishing per se, but fishing.
I quite covered electric fishing because it's quite interesting. It's a procedure, no? And it probably, this ruling probably will put the word end to the entire row on electric fishing. It was the latest Dutch attempt to halt this ban of this controversial practice, which basically consists of sending electric signals to stun fish away from the seabed before scooping them in nets. So it's basically, but what is interesting from the ruling is that the European Court of Justice is putting boundaries to the science-oriented approach of the EU lawmaking. For instance, the judges pointed out that the EU lawmakers are not obliged to base their legislative choice as to technical measures on the available scientific and technical opinions only. For instance, also on environment aspects and so on. So this is why it was. It actually goes beyond the complex issue of the electric pools fishing.
Yeah, talking about the gene editing, we were just talking about all the other kind of scientific areas of progress in agri. It is really interesting, and they even went further. They were saying, you know, that basically, we're not obliged to put every new technique and every new everything that's progressive and into a kind of legislative act just because it's innovative. You know, they were saying that's not enough to, you know, just because something's new, it's not enough. Which I thought was very interesting, very, very interesting,
super interesting, and at least as interesting as our second place.
Oh, silver place goes to
the end of cage age initiative. So there was this European Citizens Initiative, which basically allow some petition, some public petition that reach the 1 million signatures threshold to be discussed by the European Commission. The European Commission can also decide to put forward a legislative proposal on the matter. For instance, it happens with the first citizen initiative that actually was implemented in EU law on the right to water, which was a part of the recent revision of the Drinking Water Directive. So these campaigners are basically collected 1.4 million, so quite a lot of signatures, and now they're waiting for the response of the Commission. But in this hearing that happened on Thursday, for instance, Agriculture Commissioner Wojciechowski seems to be very
enthusiastic.
Very enthusiastic. He said that
very positive signals from.
It basically promised support to campaigners, but even other commissioners. There was Vera Jourova, the vice president of the Commission, and Stella Kyriakides, food safety commissioner, were quite supportive of the initiative. And finally, the other top news.
Oh, do we need a drum roll?
It's Alumi, the Cypriot white gold.
Is it time for my joke?
No.
Okay, carry on.
I mean, now you have to explain.
As you were.
Now you have to explain what this joke is.
Now, as you were, I'll finish on it. I'll finish on a high note with my joke. If you can call it a high note.
Anyway, this Alumi officially got the one of the highest form of protection granted by the EU, which is the PDO, Protected Designation of Origins. It was stuck in the Commission for 7 years, actually, for geopolitical implications. And again, this decision goes beyond its food implications, because it actually allows this product to cross the green line, which is basically the military boundaries between the northern part of Cyprus and the southern part of Cyprus. So again, it's actually important even for the peace process in the island. For instance, it triggered the reaction from High Representative, the EU High Representative Borrell, asking the other party to come back to the negotiation table when it comes to the peace process in Cyprus. For its implication, the PDO status of Alumi is our top thing happened this week in the EU bubble.
And what did the cheese say when it saw itself in the mirror, Gerardo?
What does it say?
Hello, me. And that's all from us this week. And this week, the AgriFood podcast, like every week, was produced by Euractiv's AgriFood news team. That's Gerardo Fortuna and Natasha Foote, with the support of Euractiv's podcast producer, Evie Chiori. You can also find this podcast on all major streaming platforms, including Apple, Amazon, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Be sure to subscribe to our newsletter so you don't miss the latest agriculture news from the EU. I'm Gerardo Fortuna. Thanks for listening and see you next week.
This podcast is part of Euractiv's project Beyond Agriculture, funded by the IMCAP program of the European Union. The content of this podcast represents the views of the author only and is his, her sole responsibility. The European Commission does not accept any responsibility for use that may be made of the information it contains.